Leibel to the right hand, puts Herb down. He's going to jump him hard to the ice. Brady Leibel just loves to fight.
Ladies and gentlemen. Welcome.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Warrior.
My dream of being a professional hockey player became a reality, but it was all taken away from me in a very short period of time. For many years, hockey was my outlet. Hockey was my drug. When I had a stick in my hand, nothing else mattered. I was able to break into the Western Hockey League in 2004, and I even won the Swift Current Broncos Rookie of the Year. During the summer of my rookie year, I experimented with drugs for the first time. After just 7 games in my sophomore season, I walked away from the Swift Current Broncos due to personal reasons. Nobody knew I had been sexually abused at the age of 5. I did everything to hide it from everybody, but I just couldn't take it. Drugs and alcohol now took over my life. I did return to the Swift Current Broncos as a 19-year-old, but things were never the same. I was eventually traded to the Kelowna Rockets in my final year of junior, where I got to play on a line with the Dallas Stars captain, Jamie Benn, and one of my best friends, the extremely talented Colin Long. It was by far my best season ever, and I even signed with the Tampa Bay Lightning's organization. A dream come true, right? That's when everything went wrong. First it was the cocaine, then came the Oxycontin, and that led me into a 12-year journey into the deepest pits of hell. Within 2 years, I had now made the switch to heroin, fentanyl, and everything in between, and I was now an intravenous drug user. Multiple suicide attempts and over 5 trips to the psych ward, I was a shadow of who I once was. By 2014, I was homeless on Hastings in Vancouver, the worst street in North America. By 2015, I was a wanted criminal, making the Crime Stopper headlines more than once. After spending 3 years in jail, I had completely given up. With nowhere to turn and nowhere to go, I finally started to get honest. I took a chance and made some major changes. This is my story.
I'm on 911, where's your emergency? Someone overdosed? What's the address?
I overdosed over 10 times. I'm one of the lucky ones. And for that, I will always be grateful. This is for all the men and women we've lost. Matthew Lisinski, Mitch Fadden, this one's for you.
My name's Brady Leibold, and I've been to hell and back. This is the road to recovery.
What is going on? Welcome. Live from Muskoka, Ontario. Man, do I love living here. Ice for days. And I'm in paradise. We got the On the Pond. I think it's the 11th annual On the Pond tournament up here in Muskoka. Defending champs trying to repeat as champions beside my good friends, Jeremy Rupke from How To Hockey, Coach Chippy, of course, Hayden Hiles. We got the creator crew going. And looking to repeat. If you're in Muskoka, come say hi this weekend. Other than that, I want to get right into this episode. This one for me has been a bit of a long time coming, and I'm a huge fan of this person, this human, both as a hockey player, but more as a human. Just been able to read his book, Down and Back. If you haven't read it, I'll be honest, Borny, I know you're backstage. I didn't read it. I listened to it on Audible, and I was so glad that it was your voice, because when the author reads it, there's just something more to it. Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it. A story of resiliency, bravery, honesty, hockey, living kind of in the shadow. I don't know if I want to say shadow, but of a dad who was an NHL superstar, and then finding his way in life after hockey, of course, on Sportsnet and so many other great places. So without further ado, let's bring him in, and we'll get to some more of the stuff, the highlights, what's going on in my life after we're done with Justin Bourne.
How's it going, man?
Welcome, man. It's been, listen, I'm a little bit nervous. I watch you every single day, dude. Like if I don't watch you live, I'm listening to it or I'm watching it on YouTube. Huge fan of Real Kipper and Bourne, and Kipper's been on the show, I think, 3 times. So welcome. And just a great pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, man, I'm honored to be here. It's funny. I feel like our lives have like run concurrently, but we don't really know each other. But like, I've been aware of you. I remember your name when I was in Kelowna, when you were there. And, you know, I think we actually played games against each other at some point. Did we not?
Yeah. You know what? I think we may have crossed paths one game in the American League and also a handful in the East Coast League.
It's more shocking that we didn't run into each other at the bars after those games than anything else.
I think you're probably right about that. You know what, though? I'll be honest, man. I was kind of a loner, dude. Like, I was not one of these guys that wanted to party with the guys, because at that time I was doing everything to hide it from everybody. I know that you can kind of relate to that, and I'm sure we'll get to that. I know quite a bit about your story, because I listened to your book twice, actually. And there's just so many great takeaways, and I just appreciate your honesty and sharing your life now in recovery from alcohol. But I mean, alcohol is just one thing. You still have to manage what it's like just to live a life. When you put down the bottle, it doesn't mean all your problems go away. And it's just really awesome to see another guy sharing the dark sides, because I think as humans, we often just want to cover that up and share the light and the happy times, but that's not always the reality.
I'm sure you can relate. Like, the best thing to come from being open with it is connecting with all the people who have gone through similar things. And, you know, you probably can relate to this too, where like, I don't necessarily know how to help other people get through their own fight, but, you know, just sort of provide your own story. And, you know, I think you've been enough rooms to know the phrase, you know, just share the experience, strength and hope. And like, you know, it's funny, 'cause like, I hate using like the cliche stuff that makes me feel corny and like a really eager, but it really has worked for me. And so, yeah, that's kind of, I find myself at a place where just like connecting with people who kind of get what it feels like to go through that.
I see. To me, that's everything. Lived experience. And right now we're talking recovery, but anywhere in life, if you can connect with somebody who's been there, done it, lived it, survived it, whatever, at least for me, I can only speak for me, like, that's where I started to one, get the courage to come forward when I saw one person just share and say, hey, I'm not okay, or this is what's going on with me. I'm like, holy shit, I'm not alone here. And there's so much power in that. We don't have to know how. I feel like we don't have to know how to help somebody necessarily, because we both know that ultimately you have to want to help yourself. But by sharing our experiences, it can really be the defining moment of when somebody's like, hey, you know what? Okay, that door's open a little bit. I'm going to peek through and maybe join them in that life of recovery. So I just can't thank you enough for sharing that with the world. And just a great book. If you haven't read it or listened to it, in my case, please check it out, Down and Back. And I want to ask you more questions about that later, but I would love to hear more about Justin Bourne, the young boy. Like, I read in your book, you kind of, you know, of course, you're the son of hockey legend Bob Bourne, New York Islanders legend, hockey legend. Like, I can't imagine what that would be like growing up as a young boy, having somebody like Bob Bourne as your dad. But you kind of happened before you were around. Like, you don't have a ton of memories from that, but it really captivated me that as a young boy, you really didn't have the dream, or maybe allow yourself to believe that, hey, I can play pro hockey, or I want to play pro hockey. So tell us a little bit more about your childhood, Borny.
Yeah, you know, I think what's kind of tough is like, so it's just like the normal when you're in it, you know, as a kid, you know, I'm at the, you know, I have the other Islanders kids and our next door neighbors, their dad plays in the NHL too. And like, it just, you know, it just kind of is your life. Like, it feels like that's what every kid is going through. And then, so my dad gets traded to the Kings, eventually retires. And then I think, you know, that's kind of when your memories start coming online a little bit, right? I'm like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, and like really just sort of developing this, like, oh my God, like my dad is like a really, at that time, he was a pretty famous guy. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Like, he was, so I was just like starting to develop that like level of like hero worship. And it was kind of at that time that my dad started falling apart with his own life. And so my parents got divorced when I was, I don't know, 8, 9, somewhere in that window, somewhere at a time where, you know, it hurts as a kid, you know, particularly when you're admiring your dad the way that the people have admired him. So, yeah, like hockey kind of wasn't at the forefront of what we did. Once we went to Kelowna, we were away from the Islanders and the Kings and Sports Illustrated and all those other things. And after the divorce, it was just kind of like my mom figuring it out with, you know, she's a single mom all of a sudden. My brother is disabled and, you know, needs a lot of attention. He had multiple surgeries at that time. So I feel like a lot of my life at that time was just like getting by, man, you know, helping as best I could with my brother. And I liked hockey. And to this day, like, I think that's why I ended up more passionate about it when I was older, is it wasn't foisted upon me and no one said you had to do it. Even though my dad played, I eventually found out that I just really liked it. And yeah, it was sort of the journey from there. It felt like, it was an authentic growth within me that I came to love hockey and then eventually hate it. But I did love it for a little while in the early going. So yeah, it was a journey to get there.
I love that. I think there's so many of us that can relate to that. But I believe you're in a little bit different place today. Like, I watch your passion and your understanding for the game. Like, you have to love the game now. I know it's a job still for you, but it's for me anyways, it's so enjoyable to be able to sit back and appreciate it. I think you went through, and we're kind of jumping all over the place, but I went through something similar to that you went through, where when you stop playing, it's very hard to watch. It never ends the way that we want it to end. Even if you're the one of the best ever, right? Like, it's, you never really end on your terms. I think Gretzky might be the only guy, one of few, but I bet you he still missed it. And it's tough, right? It's tough when we leave the game, and especially when you start to see guys start to accomplish things and you're like, that guy, like, how? That's where my hate for the game started to come in for many years. And I think it was, and at the time it was, I wanted to hate on other people, but really I was just more mad at myself for not giving myself the best chance to succeed, right? Playing that victim mentality. It's a lot different now, but
I don't want to get you in trouble. Was there anyone in particular that like really drove you crazy? If you don't want to say,
I'll tell you the one, and this is no offense to him. Right. His name was a Kelowna Rocket. His name was Milan Kitner. And he was a European from Slovakia, and he didn't play many games, but I remember I was in rehab and, all the guys, you know, right? They want to watch hockey. It was the same thing when I was in jail. Like, guys want to watch hockey. I'm like, I'm not watching that. Like, I'm not watching Jamie Benn while I'm in rehab or I'm in jail. Like, you know, so I'm sitting there one time. I'm like, okay, they're like, just watch it with us. Just watch it with us. Like, talk hockey with us. And so I'm watching it and we watch the one game and then the next game, it's a later game and it's Oilers. And they're like, incoming, walking in for his first game ever on Hockey Night in Canada is Milan Kitner. And I'm like, he's fourth line in Kelowna, right? And and I'm like, okay, I'm done. Like, I stopped watching hockey for many years. And I love Kitsy, great guy, but just one of those comparable moments where at the time you don't have the appreciation for all the things that he was doing that I wasn't doing. Right.
Yeah, and it's such a thing with like resentments in the program where you're like, I'm mad at this person for this thing. And then you kind of like turn it around and you're like, you know, what's my part in that? And it's like, oh, that's me. I'm mad at myself because I didn't put in the effort and they did. And yeah, that is all too relatable. Just like, I can't watch for like a decade. I'll check back in a decade.
Yeah. When I don't know anybody. But yeah, you know what? I think there's a lot to learn from your story. And I think if I'm, you know, I coach hockey, I do development with pro guys, but a lot of youth too. And it's just that grind. These kids, they don't make a team. They think their life is over. And they're like 12, 13 years old. And I know many stories like yours, but we're talking to you. So let's talk about you. Like, you played double A, you weren't even in the conversation.
Yeah.
And how many guys did you go on and pass eventually? And they were probably going, Borny, American Hockey League? What the hell? Borny full ride scholarship? They were probably feeling what we were just talking about. But tell us a little bit about that journey and when the moment was for you where it was like, man, you know what? I can get that scholarship. I am going to put that extra work in. And then there's one more thing. And when you're done that, I really think it's interesting. And then we're going to get to that. But let's hear about that moment when it clicked for you, because you were just going through the motions, enjoying the game, loving the game. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, I'm pretty damn good at this and I can make a life out of it.
No, it was, I was pretty old, man. Like, I played Bantam B in Kelowna when I was like 13 and 14. And then at 15, I made the A rep team in now what's West Kelowna. Then it was Westside Minor Hockey. And I was a pretty good player at that point. At 15, I was one of our, I don't know, maybe our sixth best player. But the next year when I was like 16, I was the captain of the team. I scored a ton. I also had grown like 6 inches, and all of a sudden I'm, you know, tall and can score. And so junior teams had some interest. And I guess sort of around there where I was like, okay, so I'm going to go play junior hockey. I should lift like a weight. You know, I should see like what happened if I really, you know, committed to this. And junior B kind of gave me that room to, you know, try to see what I could do with it. And I had a really good year. I ended up leading our team in scoring. And at that point, so that was I'm 17 years old. I've led a junior B team in scoring. And you go, if I play junior A the next year, wow, like good players at junior A get scholarships. I'll be 18. I'll have 3 years, you know, 2 or 3 years to see if that can happen. And I started to get the bug, like, okay, let's see what I can do with this. And I realize now I was starting pretty far behind the eight ball compared to some people who had really committed and chased this thing. But, you know, you know how it is, you play it out in your head, where I didn't have the dream as a kid, but then it's like, God, yeah. Then if you go to college, then you have like a 4-year runway to get better. You know, and guys make it out of that. And you just start to see like a future for it a little bit. So yeah, I came to it a little bit later, but those are definitely the good years for me. Junior playing in Vernon for a couple of years and then going to college.
Vandekamp.
Did you play for Vandy? No.
No, I took a couple meetings with them. I almost ended up in Vernon at one point when I was deciding if I was going to go to the Western League or the BCHL. It was either there or Coquitlam. And
yeah.
He scared the hell out of me then when I was 15, 16. And I honestly, I think I should have went, right? Yeah. Like that's probably where I should have went. Maybe it would have changed things. Tell us a little bit about Vandekamp. Like,
yeah, well, like I don't think, unless I'm like hyper naive, our team didn't party much or go out much because of the way he was. Like there was curfews and they called and, you know, bag skates. It's funny because, you know, it's maybe a little bit at the time looking at an 18-year-old, maybe a bit emotionally manipulative or, you know, the word is not. I will clarify, it's not abusive. Like he was, but it was definitely using every shred of leverage he had to push me in a way that I didn't know that I could get better. I didn't know how hard I could work. I didn't know, you know, the level of commitment necessary. And so not everyone could take it. He was not a kind, warm person, you know, but it was what I needed. And I know that doesn't mean it was what everyone needed, but it was what I needed. And I don't know if that, you know, who it would have helped or whatever, but yeah, he was throwing stuff at us. Like, you know, I remember being against the glass with his stick pinned up underneath my neck because I was laughing while he was explaining a drill or something like that. And so,
oh my God.
Yeah. You know,
Live Barn would get him nowadays, Borny? Live Barn with all the videos in the rink. They had something happen with the Swift Current coach a couple months ago where he skated across the ice and he slashed a kid's stick, maybe for the same reason. I don't know any other backstory, but as far as I know, that coach still isn't coaching in the Western Hockey League. So things have changed a little bit. But to your point, Borny, like, do you think that he really helped you get to that next level? Like, what does your life look like if you didn't, if maybe you had a kind, softer coach? Like, you can't really look and it doesn't serve us to look back, but how much of an impact did a guy like Vandekamp have on you getting to that next level?
See, it's hard, man. Cause I think I know all the right things to say these days are that, like, you know, a kinder coach could have done it too. And I did it on my own and, you know, whatever particularly in the mental health community, you want to be careful with, like, you can't have coaches putting their sticks on guys' throats. I know that's wrong, but it definitely was the kick in the ass I needed. And I'm not saying I think it's right or it's good for other kids or other coaches should emulate that. But for what I needed at that point, I was a soft mama's boy who, you know, really thought everyone should just treat each other nice. And why did we all have to be mad all the time? So I needed someone who would put a little fire into me.
I love it. And yeah, I think we can all agree, but there is something to it, right? And again, it's not for everybody, but that can sometimes really help somebody or really hurt somebody. And in your case, it really helped you.
It's got to be case by case, person by person, right? It's not one size fits all.
Yeah, and it's very hard to do that when you're coaching and you're never going to get that, try to be everything for 20 people on a team. But I'm interested because I'm, you know, as listening to your book and, you know, obviously watching you over the last few years, I probably feel like I know you better than than I do, just because a lot of people, when you see somebody on TV, I know it's just on TV, but I look at, like, I read your book and I listen to, like, how you were as a kid. Like, you were a pretty good kid, man. Yeah. Like, you know, pretty straight, like making all the right choices. And I think to an 18-year-old Justin Bourne, if, you know, we could go back and be like, hey, you know, in 20 years, you're going to be, you know, going to rehab, 15, 20 years, you're going to go to rehab because you're struggling with alcohol. Like, would you have ever believed that at 18 years old?
Absolutely not. No, not at all. And that's, you know, kind of what makes me really believe in, like, the genetic factors at play. You know, that just is like, this is something that's in my family, my grandpa, my dad, my uncle, an aunt, you know, like, it is everywhere in my family. And I do believe that there is this like biological factor. And I remember the first time, you know, I've read your story pretty thoroughly too. And, you know, I remember you talking about, you know, you were in junior, right? When you first started kind of dabbling with drugs here and there. I remember being in college and, you know, we're on the end of like a 2 or 3 day bender or whatever. And all my guys or my roommates are like shutting her down and trying to have a nap. And I remember looking around and the feeling inside me and just being like, I like this more than everyone else. Mm. You know, this is different for me than it is for them. And I'm going out whether they're going out again or not. And, you know, that's the start of eventually it gets to the point where, you know, you just don't want people to know how much you're going out or what you're doing, because it clearly is different for me than them at that point.
Yeah. And you, I mean, you had a successful junior career, and like you said, you guys didn't really go out much, whether that's because, and again, you know, maybe it's because of Annie, the coach, but also I find that when I'm having conversations with guys who play junior any number of places or college, or it can really depend on who's in that room. Like, one or two guys can be the difference maker, good or bad. And it can just be a totally different experience for people. And I had some unfortunate veterans when I was a young rookie in Swift Current. I'll just say, again, I don't blame them. I think, you know, they probably went through very similar things and they thought it was their rite of passage to be the older guy, and has been like that for 50 plus years. But yeah, I think it can really matter about who's on the team. If you have good pieces around, or bad pieces around, it can make a difference. But you found yourself right there, full ride scholarship, buddy. Let's go. Like, that was your dream, right? It wasn't the NHL. It was first to get a full ride scholarship. And at one point in time, that felt like it was far away, but you put yourself in a position and had success on the ice and worked your ass off the ice. And now you're there. And it kind of brings us into that story when you're in college and you're looking around going, I like this more than everybody else. I can relate to that. There was many moments in my life where it was like, and I'm trying to encourage, right? Like, I look back, I'm like, man, I was a bad friend. I was trying to encourage more toxic behaviors. But at the time, you don't, at least I didn't realize that. It was this overwhelming sense and urge to just keep going. And it just wouldn't shut off. Is that similar for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I even went into university as someone who like didn't drink much. And it wasn't like I had good roommates too. Like, you know, they were pretty normal, straight edge, not straight edge, you know, they like to party and all that, but nothing. It was pretty normal. And I just, over the years, found my way to liking it more. And that was like when I had a really good sophomore year. So I'm like, I don't know, 21 or two. And I was, it's like, okay, well, I am established as a leading scorer on the team my second year. Real NHL, not that I thought I could make the NHL, but like being a pro hockey player seemed like a very viable thing for me at that point. And I remember that was the first summer where I was single. I went back to Kelowna for the summer. You probably know Kelowna in the summer. You know, in my decisions, that was the first time I would walk into the gym hungover and I would just be like, I can't fucking do it. Yeah. You know, like I just, you know, I need to go back out and whatever. And I just had a really bad training summer, you know, went back and got, went back to university out of shape, got a DUI in camp, you know, before the season started, and things just went to hell, you know? And that was, you know, I kind of pulled it together at times a little bit after that. Like, you're not, it doesn't just like straight down necessarily, but definitely it was at that point. I was like, I started really fighting it.
Yeah. That's tough. And have you talked to any guys that you played with, and without naming them, like these years later, are you aware of guys that are maybe have or are currently struggling or were struggling like you were back then, but nobody's talking about it? Like, have you had any of those conversations?
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. A few guys, you know, I mean, there's a guy or two that, you know, we're pretty openly going through it. Like, you'd see the condition of the guy at the rink the next day and you had some idea with some guys, yeah. You know, other guys hit it a little better, but it's, yeah, I think looking back, just like the desire to, like, I don't know, be cool. I don't know what it was that these conversations could never have happened then. But yeah, I would say I've probably talked to 4 or 5 former teammates that also struggle. Some of them still struggle and are not necessarily better, but, you know, you kind of have to make that decision. And as you mentioned, you kind of have to want to do it for yourself. And some guys just aren't ready. You know, you're not ready at a certain point.
Yeah, for sure. You get your full ride. Yes, you had some struggles, DUI, start drinking, but still a ton of success on the ice. You put yourself in a pretty good spot. Maybe could have, looking back, could have put yourself in a better spot, maybe, yeah. But you still put yourself in a pretty good spot to venture into professional hockey. What's that moment like for you? Take us through that.
So you and I both went to NHL camp in 08, I think. You were Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was the Islander camp that year. You know, and a little bit of extra pressure, right, because of the dad's name, that whole thing. And so just getting to put on that jersey, like, let's just say that there's some favoritism for my last name, which of course there is. You know, like, that's part of the reason. You know, I had another opportunity. Montreal also invited me to a camp.
Still good enough to be there.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't like, I didn't stick out in a way that embarrassed anyone. So I, you know, I let myself have a couple moments when I put on the jersey of just like, damn, you know, like that, you know, from kind of where I was at 16 years old to that would have been 24 or something. It was like, damn, this is crazy. But yeah, that first year of pro hockey for me, you know, you listen to the book and I would say, I softened the book as best I could for, you know, my mom and for my wife and whatever. But like, you know, I don't know if it had been different. You talked about a couple guys in the room. Like, would it have been different? Whatever. I had a pretty good year, but like as the year went on, I kind of got more involved in the garbage and we had a bad doctor, man. Like, you know, at the time I thought he was a great doctor. But, you know, the kind of guy you could go to and get pills and without really much of an explanation. This guy brought his script bad to our Christmas party or to one of our parties and was just like taking orders.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
That's not in the book, is it?
No, it's not. I left the party with a prescription for, yeah, it was Perks, muscle relaxers, Ambien, and Xanax, like just in one script. And you hand that to the pharmacist and they look at you like, come on. Like, no one gets all of this, you know, that's not a cocktail that a doctor writes you a script for, but he did.
I had pharmacists call the doctor, like in that situation. Cause the pharmacist is like, I'm not filling this. And they're like, or not. And I'm like, well, call the doctor. And then I remember, I can still see this one time, this pharmacist was so pissed and I was abusing oxys at the time, but this doctor, like your doctor, was prescribing them and I lose my gym bag, right? Or they got stolen or whatever, right? So here, and now I'm in the pharmacy third time in like 10 days, same pharmacist. And I remember him looking at me, I'm not filling it. I'm like, well, call the doctor then. And he calls the doctor and I could just hear, like, you know, the rufflings of a thing. And he just looks at me and just hangs up the phone, doesn't say anything, and he had to fill it, right? Because the doctor said, and he was so mad.
Yeah.
But think about, you know, you were a little bit older than me, but not much, just a couple years.
Yeah.
You think you're a lot older than you are, but you're 24, 25 years old. Yeah. Like, that's a kid, man.
I know.
And here's somebody with a ton of authority and power and trust and just – and me, man, I was a dumb hockey player. Who the hell am I going to – why would I question a doctor? Did you have – like, can you relate to that a little bit?
Yeah. Oh my God. No, it's 100%. It's, yeah, looking back, first off, I really love the point about, you know, that age and, you know, because we're older, we look back at that age. I'm sure you do that forever, you know, thinking that, you know, a certain age is a bunch of, you know, you're just not fully formed. But as a hockey player, you just exist in such a sheltered world every day. It's, you know, it's home rink, home rink, home rink for like 8 years. You know, you have no worldly experience and you're right. You're still such a kid and all you know is like, this works for me. You know, we had our that year our team doctor, so not the doctor, but the trainer, I guess, would go back on the bus, and he had like a belt holster for all like the, you know, the pills, right? And you'd go back and you'd be like, who needs what, essentially, you know, muscle relaxers, whatever. And we would have one guy distract him while the other guy like picked perks out of the thing from this side, you know, like, God, man, there's this scandal right now with like a, is it actually the Broncos as well, where there there was a bounty on a player's head or something like that? Anyway, this is like a new thing in junior hockey.
I got to look at that. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually think it might have been Swift Current. But when I was playing, I remember a guy putting up like a thing on the board, like, you know, if so-and-so, you know, you put this guy in his ass, or, you know, put a lick on him, whatever, and like five perks or whatever. It was like on the board.
God.
So, you know, it was a year where I probably had like this predisposed nature for some of this stuff, but I just that year really shoved it into, there was no looking back after that.
Yeah. And like, that's a hard world to navigate. And for some people, you know, they might try it and not like it, never do it again. Some people might be able to handle it. But for some people, that can legitimately, in the end, kill them. By having, it doesn't seem like it at the time, you're playing hockey, but you look at the pictures behind me and they're all passed away. And most of them, their stories, overdose started very similar to the situations that we're just talking about, right?
And doctor, like, I'm telling you about, ended up in jail tied to Bugart's death.
That's right. I remember reading that in your book. And I mean, his picture's right here. I played with his little brother the year after in the Central League. I didn't play for 2 years and went to rehab and walked out of rehab, got in a plane and flew down there. But I remember being with Aaron and like, he was on charges, right? Because he allegedly flushed some pills down the toilet because, you know, just whatever in a moment, like, and it just was just a terrible, terrible situation.
Yeah.
And like, that was the reality of what was going on. And I know things are a lot different, but that stuff still is happening at different levels of hockey. And I think it's important to have these conversations. And like, we can, you know, in some respects, like when it's our stories, like, you know, I'm laughing about it now,
yeah.
But you know, it was for me, I'm very lucky. You are too, very lucky just to be alive. But like, that could have been like, we might not have been having this conversation right now based on a situation that happened in a dressing room because of a hockey injury that you never imagine or picture or believe where it could take you, where the end result could be. So yeah, kind of off track, but that's what happens here on this show. It's just what happens. So
yeah.
Talk to me about, you know, playing in the American, like you made it to the American League. You had success in the American League. You know, you're in the coast. That's kind of where we met, played against each other a couple times. But then you take a puck to the face, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty messed up. So that was my, you know, I had that good, you know, the year I mentioned that with the bad doctor, like I had success. I made the ECHL All-Star team and, you know, it was like, got some AHL call-ups. So the next year I got invited back to Islanders camp. You'll be able to relate to that I got invited back and I declined it because I was in such bad shape. I didn't want to embarrass my family.
Yeah.
You know, I remember laying in bed like an August 16th morning and getting the text, like, we need to know if you're coming to camp or not. And just texting back like in a puddle of my own sweat, like, you know, sorry, I'm going to go a different route just because I was in worse shape than I was the year before when I went. So yeah, you know, that next year was rough. So I wasn't in good shape, hurt myself in camp, tore my MCL, whatever. I came back, I was kind of rehabbing, trying to get back playing, and well, rehabbing, just at that point, I just had bottles of vodka in the house and that was just how I was living. And then, yeah, I came back on my birthday. They're like, we're going up to Alaska. That's where you played university. Why don't you come up? It'll be your first game back. And it was my 26th birthday. And I passed the puck up out of the corner and went to the net. And my D-man shot the puck. And I see all these, like, plays. The guy's getting, like, pucks tipped up and they glance off, whatever. I mean, I was turning into it like a baseball bat, just a screamer, man. My jaw was all over the place, moving in two pieces. I got 10 screws. I got an X screw. My face is a mess.
It looks great. Game I ever played. It looks, that's tough. I want to go back to that, but just before we get there, you look great. Your teeth are probably all fake or something. I don't know, but you look
like a million. Good job. You
look like a million bucks. You look great. Talk to me about that moment. I mean, you're already mentally not in a good place. You just said you're rehabbing with vodka. Like, where's, if you don't mind, like, where's your mental state at? And like, are you just hanging on because this is all you know? Like, what else am I going to do if I don't play hockey? Like, where are we at mentally and sort of what was the deciding factor on being like, hey, no more pucks to the face?
Yeah. Well, that definitely was like the progression of trying to figure out what to do with my life. I will say, I remember being in the hospital with the morphine button and talking to my wife on the phone, being like, this is going to be great. I'm going to read all these books. So, you know, my jaw's wired shut. And I was like, I'm going to have all this time. Like, this is going to be the best thing. Like, that was just morphine being like, you know, doing what morphine does. And so I drank like liquid Percocet for 2 months after that, because I was in wires for almost 8 weeks because it kept getting infected. So over that time, you know, at that point, you're having the life talk with yourself where it's like, it had to keep progressing at the rate it was progressing for me, or I was just too old. And I was 26 that had, you know, so it's like, you know, you're in the East Coast League having a bad year at 26, like you're cooked, you know, like, so I was looking into going to play in The Hague. I had like a deal offered in the Netherlands.
Yeah. I went over there for a hot minute.
Did you?
Oh my God, it was great. Except I went there with a severe, severe Oxycontin addiction and thought that I would just go there and kick it in 3 days, never having gone through that.
Right? Yeah.
And yeah, shit just fell apart so fast. I played one game, two shifts. I literally laid on the bench because I was so dope sick. And the Mark Peterson coach put me out there on the power play. I scored and went shot from the point right off my toe, or sorry, off my kneecap.
Yeah,
right off my kneecap and in, and that was it. And I looked at him, I'm like, I gotta go home. So sorry to jump in, but The Hague, you never went?
Never went. No, by that time it was kind of getting later in the year. I actually, you know, I at the time while I was kind of having these life talks with yourself, like, what are you going to do? You know, I don't have a degree. I was a few credits shy in my degree, but even still, it was a psychology degree. Like, you know, I wasn't going to go back to school at 26. I didn't think. And like, I didn't want to start from the bottom of, you know, of work. So I was writing emails back and forth with my uncle, who was a sports writer. And he's like, you got all this time, you got all these opinions, just put them on a blog. You know, and so I started blogging. And then to have like an active player that was blogging at the time, I think was a rare thing. So the Hockey News started to like run some of my pieces for $15 an article, which, you know, sick. When you're in the East Coast, like, that was relevant. Yeah.
Paid writer. That's pretty cool though. Like, okay. So what about leading up to that, Borny? Like, were you, obviously I know you were blogging and you were on the Twitter and really kind of into that, but as a kid, was that ever kind of in the back of your mind, being a sports writer, being an analyst? When did it really, I mean, it wasn't at $15 an article probably, but when did it click that, hey, like, I have a future in this. This can pay my bills. This can provide me a nice life. And I know, like you said, $15 an article is not going to do it, but you're in a much better place now doing it, and you're really, really good at it. So like, where did that come from? Did you take it in university or?
Yeah, thanks. I, you know, I did take English. I always was like the guy in junior who was not like, I don't know, like I would read on the bus and people would be like, you know, what people would call me at that point, if you're reading a diary of Anne Frank on a junior hockey bus or whatever. But, you know, so I don't know. I guess I always had an interest and the ability to sort of with words. So I took a lot of English in university as well. And then I guess I started to consider it seriously when, you know, I put some stuff out there and then it kind of got me into like the blogging community, and you'd start to read other people's work. And not to be whatever, but it happens in any profession, and it happened as a player where you go, I'm as good as that guy. Mm. You know, like I've seen that work. Like, I can do that. And you know, and you start to sort of go, you look around and go, okay, you know, like, I think I'm as good as most of these guys or whatever. You know, it's tough to say that like a humble way, but you have a moment where you know you can do it.
Yeah.
And then so the fact that I also had the like appeal to authority that some people didn't have, where I could say, you know, not just say, but have authentic experience in the game to say, you know, this is what happens here. I'd be able to see the X's and O's. I also was not a drill wrecker. I don't know about you, but like I understand the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, being able to understand it and see it a little bit and then be able to write about it. There weren't many people doing it then. There certainly are a lot more now.
Well, I think there's a lot of more doing it. How good are they doing it? I don't know. But there's some really good ones. Don't get me wrong. But I feel like there's maybe a little bit watered down, sort of like junior hockey with all these pay to play leagues now. It's a tough world for players to navigate. And that's something that's been at the kind of forefront of my mind, stuff that I've been dealing with, parents losing tens and tens of thousands of dollars chasing a junior dream that doesn't exist. But anyways, that's a little off topic. I love your stuff, man. You retire, you're living in Arizona, beautiful place. You're then fiance, maybe, or were you married yet? You're married.
Yeah, we got engaged there and then got married before. Yeah, while we were still there.
Yeah, and you're kind of letting her kind of follow her dreams at the time. But then you get the call and it's like, hey, you want to come work at the Score in Canada?
Yeah, that was, you know, it was cool because like we went to Arizona just because I was sick of living in cold hockey places. Like you, I had been everywhere that kind of was freezing. Arizona's cheap. She had a job opportunity, whatever. And a bottle of Sky Vodka was $19.99 at Costco, a big one, like not a little one, the big one was. So that was terrible for me because I was writing for largely Toronto is where a lot of the media is, right?
Yeah.
So you do the hockey writing and by 2 o'clock, it's 5 o'clock in Toronto. No one else is working. So I was finished every day super early. And yeah, it was really, I really got unhealthy in Arizona. I gained, I don't know, 40 pounds, and just like, was terrible. But so I got this opportunity at the Score and they were like, come on up, you know, we'll pay you a little bit more if you do it from here. And my wife knew I needed to change. I was in a bad way. And I remember getting up here and, you know, trying to live as an alcoholic who nobody saw to being an alcoholic in, you know, an office with other people. And I just like was not ready for that. I mentioned in the book, like I got up to the elevator the first day. And you know where it is, like Gretzky's downtown there. Yeah, I literally just like this, the Homer Simpson into the bushes, went back to the bar across the street until I had enough beer that I felt that I could like be myself and steady. But always, you know, you're hiding something, you got beer in your breath, you feel just sweating. So yeah, it sucked. It was great that I got the opportunity, but it took me a long time to feel comfortable. I never really felt comfortable, but I got there eventually.
Well, I just wanted to say too, you're married to hockey legend Clark Gillies' daughter, yeah. Right? For people that don't know, by all accounts, I've never met her. I've only know samples from the book, but by all accounts, she seems like an absolute saint. Seems like your best friend and somebody that supported you through some of your darkest days. And not everybody has that. So shout out to your wife.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah.
Because that, as we all know, that's a really, really hard thing to do, to watch somebody essentially killing themselves and wanting to help so bad. And yeah, so shout out to your wife and to your family for helping you navigate it, because it can be, like we said at the beginning, ultimately we have to want to do it ourselves. But when you're ready and you're doing the work and then you have that support and you have that support in place, I mean, that's where people find success in recovery. That's what I've seen anyways. So just wanted to give a shout out to your wife. At this point in time in your life though, Borny, it's pretty dark, right? Like real dark, probably at like the worst it's been now at this point.
Yeah. It's, you know, there's kind of like this up and down where, yeah, I would say I was pretty close to a low. I go to the Marlies and I sort it out for a little bit and then I hit the true.
Oh yeah. Talk to me about that, because I'm fast. And sorry, I know I'm not the best. I'm not the best host, man. I'm just a hack. So you get a job with the Marlies in the American Hockey League as a video coach, which I think is really cool. I know there's a lot of work that goes into it. It sounds like it's not that you were responsible for way more than people could ever believe, I'm sure. Yeah. But I mean, I'm kind of curious. Like, I know you're into the journalism. You're great at what you do. But I also watch you on almost a daily basis, and you understand the game. Like you brought it up earlier. Now, one more thing I want to say. I have a note here. Humble moment. You're saying like when you're looking at writers and you're saying, hey, like I'm as good as that guy or whatever. And you're like, well, I'm trying to be humble, but or whatever. But like when you're, we have to learn as people to be confident, right? Yeah. And believe in ourselves. We, for so long, have been like told to not be cocky, not be arrogant. There's a fine line, but when I found whenever I've been successful, when I've talked to people who've been successful, it's because they own it. Like they own it. They're like, I'm good at this. I'm confident in this. So I just wanted to circle back to that point, just for people listening. I think we all need to do a much better job. Yes, being humble, but also being confident and allowing ourselves to believe, because I never did that for myself. And it was always this conversation in my head, like, you're not good enough. You're not good enough.
Yeah.
And then anytime I say I'm good, then I'm trying to justify, well, I'm trying to be humble or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
That's I don't even think that that's just like society in general. That's very hockey.
Yeah.
You know, like it is extremely like you don't ever, you know, you could be Austin Matthews who scores 51 times 54 games and he has to be like, well, it's my teammates are so good at, and it's just like, no, it's like you're allowed to be awesome at something and own it. So, no, I think that's a relevant thing.
That was a really, really great point. Man, can that guy shoot the puck? It's unbelievable. Yeah. I honestly kind of forgot what I was saying there. But
the Marlies.
Yeah, sorry. See, you're way better at this. you have a knack for the game, like a very good eye, very good understanding for the game. Is that something, and I know you're very happy in your job, but is that something that's ever calling you again to be like, hey, I don't know, like,
yeah,
coaching behind the bench, is that something you would ever want to get into, or you like being on the side you're in now?
Well, I, you know, it's interesting because one thing I really hate about the side I'm on right now is the public exposure, you know, where it's like, you know, I was on last night with Elliot and DA and Kip, and like, you know, people disagree with what you say, and you know, there is abuse online, and you know, just kind of like having to, you know, people would tell me, like, even in that room last night, I got a few messages, and the guy, like, Elliot's like, I get that stuff all the time. You just have to turn it off. And it's like, you don't deal with that so much when you're not, you know, when you're not public facing. So there is part of me that doesn't want to be public facing forever. And I don't know what that means exactly, like what else I would do with it. But that's the only reason I would want to get out of what I do now, is just, it's a different level of stress knowing that every day people are calling you X, Y, and Z, you know?
I honestly never really thought about that. I mean, I've heard Elliot and different people talk about it here and there, but I never really thought about that. But I'll tell you, I want to say, generally speaking, most people that are saying that are people that have never put skates on. Never.
Yeah.
But it's also a lot, it's nice to say that, but it's another thing when you're dealing with that abuse, and it can, doesn't matter who you are, it can wear on you. I've had different similar sort of things where people have attacked me in my recovery or whatever, sort of the same thing. And it's hard sometimes to just let it go in one ear and out the other. But yeah, I was curious for my own kind of knowing, because I really do appreciate your knowledge and like I've been very fortunate. I got to work with Adam Oates for like 7 hours a day for like 10 days last summer. I got to work with Adam Nicholas and like all these NHL guys, but I learned a lot from them. I've learned a lot from you just watching and listening how you break down the game. So I had to ask that question for my own sort of selfish reason, but I do want to get back into what's going on in your life. You're working for the Marlies, things are falling apart, but it's sort of not really anybody knows, or you're not really quite admitting it to people, but your wife's starting to get she's been knowing, but maybe putting a little bit more pressure on you. I don't know how else to say it. It's your story.
Yeah, you know, the Marlies time was really stressful, you know, just being there with Sheldon Keefe. It's a high pressure sort of exposed environment to, if it's not working, if the tech stuff isn't working, you know, by the way, I have a broken heater in here and it's 1,000 degrees. Excuse me if I'm sweating my ass off down here. I need to fix that. But anyway, so you're exposed to in the dressing room with all these players. If the tech doesn't work, and I'm not a tech guy, I'm not an IT guy. Like, they hired me out of writing blogs and they'd be like, hey, why isn't the projector working? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, that was never my strength. So I stopped my everyday drinking to kind of have my wits about me. And I shouldn't say I stopped my everyday drinking. I stopped my drinking during the mornings to sort of like steady myself. And I was able to make it till 2 o'clock when you'd get out after practice. But my second year with the Marlies, I kind of went back into my old ways. So I had like a Dasani bottle in my backpack. I always had vodka with me. I didn't want to be drunk, but I wanted to not be shaky and not whatever. So I would just have like a little bit in the morning, try to get through the day. And then I would go to the pub at 2 or 3 o'clock whenever we were done, whatever for the day. So, you know, it started, I could feel that someone was going to catch me at some point. I had one incident where they wouldn't let me run the team meeting that day because I smelled like vodka. And it just, I could feel it getting away from me. So towards the end of that second year, they offered me another contract to come back and be the video coach. They won the Calder Cup that next year, which I was not the video coach. And I literally was like, I need to get out of there before I blow it in a way that my name, my reputation goes to shit. At that time, the Athletic had kind of come into creation. I'd reached out to them and said, would you have interest in having me for this price, which is what I was making? They agreed. And so that's when I had my sort of, I could work from home. Nobody would see me. I just had to write 2 articles a week and the pay was good. So I could write an article in, I don't know, 2-3 hours. And so I had to do 2 a week. And then I just had like whatever the rest of the time to do whatever I wanted with. And that's when it really got dark for me.
Yeah. The devil works in idle hands, right? When you the more time and especially too, right? When you can make the same money and you just get more hours, it's like, okay, well, this is great. And your addict or alcoholic thinking is being like, this is the best job ever because now I have, you know, how many more hours a week to drink? You know, I read in or listened in your book too. You're starting to, you know, just to stay in the bar or walk further down the road to go to a different one. So your colleagues don't come in and catch you. I want to give you huge props too, because I was not able to do this where I could sense the walls closing in. I had people that wanted to help. But I just, for whatever reason, it was real hard for me to take that step and to stay there. But you kind of, I mean, things were real bad. Let's not kid yourself. Your health was in a bad state. Like the writing was on the wall that you need to make a change or your life is going to look a lot differently. You may no longer even be here. Mm-hmm. But you were able to kind of just garner the strength and face it head on and be like, hey, I need to make a change. And that's what you did. And I mean, alcohol, listen, opiate withdrawal is by far the most painful thing out of anything, but not the most dangerous, right? Whether you know or not, if you're watching or listening, if you're an everyday drinker and you try to stop, there's a very good chance that you will go into seizure and there's a chance you may die. That's actually how my grandpa passed away from alcohol withdrawal. And
sorry to hear that. Jeez.
Yeah, that's okay. It was many, many years ago now, but like you, it runs in my family. Yeah. I never knew as a kid, right? Like if you drink every day or whatever, and you try to stop, you're physically addicted or that there's opiates. Like, I don't know if anybody told me or it just didn't register or I just didn't care because I liked how this makes me feel now. But what a daunting task, whether it's opiates or alcohol, you know, you're going to have to go through hell and it's going to hurt.
You just, you know, man, like getting to that place, you have to be so far down for so long, you know, like it's not like you have like a bad, you get drunk and make a mistake and you go, oh, I better clean my act up. Like, you know, I had my wife was sick of my shit. Then I went to the Marlies and I was away a lot and she didn't see a lot of it. And then when I came back, you know, and did the Athletic job, you know, the volume of alcohol I was drinking, you know, like legitimately a bottle of vodka a day, aside from what I would drink at the bar, like beers, you know, I was an IPA drinker. So, you know, whatever, 8-9 beers and then go drink a bottle of vodka. And so when I didn't have alcohol, I used to like, you know, kind of call it like my brain coming back online, but I could feel physical cracking. I would like break out in hives. You know, I threw up a lot of times, and not the way people throw up from like hangovers, because I didn't get hungover anymore. You know, I needed to have the alcohol. It's when I didn't have it that I got sick. Yeah. It was just pretty pathetic lying to everyone, you know, like lying to work about why articles aren't due. And anyway, we don't need to do the whole drunk log, but it was, yeah, times where you consider your own self-worth and your purpose. And for me, a lot of what made me really hate myself was knowing that I was a capable guy and a smart guy, and I'd been giving every opportunity, and I had no excuse in my mind, you know? And so I was hard on myself because it was like, I had a great mom and a good home and opportunities galore. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you find yourself in some places that you're like, how am I here? You know, that's even worse, right? You consider yourself, I consider myself better than some of the people. I'm sitting in these, you know, dive bars doing drugs at, you know, whatever, in some weird house at 2 a.m. You know, you're like, who are these people, you know? And so, yeah, you get to that point where, you know, you need help. And it was when my wife found alcohol in the house for like the, 40th time that she said, do you need help? And I said, I think I do. And, you know, that's when I learned about what you're talking about now, that alcohol withdrawal is so terrible. Like, first off, I didn't know that when you want help, you can't necessarily just go to rehab.
Yeah.
Well, I was like, what's the process? Like, do you just like Google it? And like, you know, trying to get a bed in Ontario, one of my things that I want to help people with is it's not easy. So I was, you know, unless you have the money up front to pay for a bed, you might have to wait months.
Yep.
And if I had to wait months before I went in, I think I would have died.
Yep.
I truly think I would have. I was fortunate that I had, I had a few $1,000, my wife and I did. And my mom had a little bit of money that she was able to chip in, and we got to the number I needed to get into rehab. A week. It still took a week, and they tell you to keep drinking over that week.
Oh yeah, that's a good week, eh? When they do that.
Well, it's blow it out. You know, you're not. Yeah. You know, like it's like I know this is. Well, it's supposed to be the end anyway, and
yeah.
So yeah, you know, my wife didn't go to work, so she could like supervise me, and I'm still trying to find. It was just a sickening time, you know. And so,
yeah. You don't have to relive it. I get it, and I appreciate you sharing that. I mean, I don't want to cut you off. I just feel like. You don't need to go into that if you don't want to. We've had some really, really dark and hard conversations on this show over the last 4 years, and also a lot of light and a lot of laughs. But that's sort of what this show is about, is people tune in or listen, and they're probably like me, nodding their head yes, because a lot of people in this world can relate to the stories that you're talking about or that I've shared on this show. And that's kind of to your point. I heard you say you want to help people. Try to navigate that world when you want to get help, because man, it's hard, right? Like, you got to get detox and you got to go to rehab. And I remember I could get into rehab, but couldn't get into detox. And there's a 6-month waiting list for a detox center. And I'm like, I don't know if I have 6 seconds right now, because I just overdosed like 5 minutes ago. And now I have this moment of clarity that I want help, but you're telling me that I can't happen for 6 months. So what the fuck's the point anyways? I might as well just like, that's the mentality. And it's, you know, until you've lived it, yeah, you can't fully understand it. But, you know, I would love to maybe chat with you off the air sometime. I know you're busy, maybe in the next week or month or whatever, and kind of just like have a conversation about that, and dive more into your own experience and kind of where you see yourself kind of like fitting in and helping. Cause like you, I feel very called to do more. And right now I'm just, hockey was all I knew, right? Like that, if I don't have hockey, what else am I going to do? That was been my whole problem my whole life. But really, you know, I love coaching. I love being in the game. I love it all, but I really just want to use hockey as the vehicle, because it's so much bigger than just hockey. But I feel like if we can really get the hockey community rallied around it, then we'll get more people, more attention brought to it, more money, more. And it's not always about money. I think it's just people, I think, need to have a better understanding of number one, their own choices and how that can affect you. Cause I went through my life, especially as a kid, thinking, well, yeah, that's nice. That might happen to that guy, but never me. Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't know, I could talk about this stuff all day, but just maybe tell us before I let you go here, Borny, about your experience in rehab. Cause I was listening going, you're like looking at people who are on like conditions from jail and all these people. And so like, to your point in that book, like I had a very similar experience the first time I went to rehab.
Yeah.
And then like 10 years later, I was that guy who was on conditions and the whole, like, that's the progressive disease of alcohol and addiction. At first you walk in, you're like, am I in the right place? That could never be me. Right. But if you stay in it, you're either going to die or you're just going to keep digging because it's a bottomless pit, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, tell me about your experience in rehab and sort of where you're at today and maybe what helps you and if you have any advice for anybody listening who may be struggling.
Yeah, so I appreciate the platform to talk about it. And I'd love to talk off the air. I definitely want to do more and finally feel like I'm getting to a place where I'm able to. Yeah, rehab, you know, looking back at it was it's a dark, you know, a dark place. But, you know, the people in there, you know, it's not like people are necessarily, no one's worse or whatever. We've all just been handed such different cards. And your life, you know, you all kind of end up in this same place. But certainly there's some people there when it started, the new people would introduce themselves. Hey, I'm Justin. And you tell your story in a few minutes of what brought you there, like why you're there. This is like day one. And, you know, someone's story, the guy who went before me had like a absolute tragedy of a story where, like, you know, someone had died and he was partially to blame, you know, because of negligence. It was just this like, you know, he was ruined by it. And, you know, it was in that moment where I was like, am I deep enough down to be here? Like, I don't, you know, like my, at that point, I hadn't lost my job. I was very, I probably would have soon, but I also hadn't lost my wife, which, you know, I hadn't lost anything yet. I had lost opportunity and lost brain cells and lost respect, but I hadn't lost anything, you know, tangible at that point. And I remember being like, you know, should I be here? And I remember it was that first day where someone talked about rock bottom and how, you know, you pick your bottom, you pick it. Cause you know, there's no, people have this like idea in their mind that there's this like actual, like, you know, level you can't get past of rock bottom, but it's like, if you go back out, you'll dig beneath that and there'll be a new rock bottom and it's lower than that one. And so you just pick your bottom. And I love the idea of choose your own bottom. And for me, it was like, I didn't have to lose all that.
Yeah.
And so that was like a moment for me of like, I have the chance that not everyone has to salvage my life. You know, and for my kids, you know, then it was just my son. You know, and fortunately I had the support waiting for me on the other side. Like I went to aftercare after rehab. One of the kids told this story of like, he went home and, the first thing his mom said, he's lived on the reservation. His mom was like, oh, like good, you're back. Like, do you have that dealer's number or whatever? Like that was the home he walked back into, you know, and I was like, what chance do you have for someone, you know, in that living situation? So I just had such great support of my wife and my mom and you know, my extended family and all that. So it's like, I want to help people have that support. And often we're the support, right? It's the recovery community for people who may not have families at all. So yeah, just, you know, recognizing what I had and being able to hang on to it and, you know, that being motivation enough to, you know, do my program, do the 90 and 90, stick with it and, you know, find a better place, which I'm proud to say I'm in now.
I love it. I love it, man. Super proud of you. I don't know you well, but super proud of you because most people, you know, they don't necessarily find their way like you have. I imagine you're like me. We're always trying to get a little bit better each day. Some days for me are better than others. I don't really like to say I have a bad day because just being alive now and being kind of, you know, there's struggles, but at the end of the day, I'm not living where I used to live. And like, I'm alive, you're alive. I think so many of us, we take it for granted. You just wake up and it's like, shit, I got to go to work. Or I got to do this. Or I got to, it's like, no, you get to, you get to be alive today. So, enjoy it. And, just a huge fan of Real Kipper and Bourne, Mondays to Fridays, 4 to 6 Eastern and, all over the podcast platforms, YouTube, all those places. My favorite part of the show, maybe not my favorite part, but I can't help it when he says Sammy McKee, like literally it's stuck in my head, me and my girlfriend, I'll yell it. And I'll tell you a quick story before I let you go. It's because it was hilarious. I couldn't stop saying it like a month ago. And she had no idea what the hell it meant. She's been gotten a crash course, in hockey, she's been very spoiled with where she's been and who she's met and all this. Yeah. She loves the game now, but couldn't care about it 2 years ago.
Right.
So new lingo, the whole thing, she's kind of understanding, you know what it's like, right? The one day I'm just like, Sammy McGee, right? And she, and then all of a sudden she started saying it back to me, but she didn't, she wasn't quite saying, it was like more like, blah, 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 right? She thought it was, every time I'd say it, she'd say it. Yeah. And then it was like 3 weeks went by. And then I said it, I'm like, do you even know what you're saying right now? She goes, no, isn't it just some hockey slang? I'm like, no, it's a guy's name. Like this is, I'm down for a minute and then watch. And she's like, oh, like, so now anytime I'm like, Sammy McGee. And she's like, blah, 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 like in the house. So it's like one of our, it's one of our things. So it's really funny, but
it's a good part of my day. Cause I know I get Kipper's attention there. It's really tough to get off air, but once he's in that mode, I get his full attention.
Yeah. Well, you guys do a great job between you and Kipper and Sammy. It's my go-to. I shut pretty much everything down when you guys come on, and it's sort of, another point where it's nice that I'm actually enjoying listening about hockey, because
yeah,
I wouldn't have watched your show a few years ago either, right? It wasn't just hockey, it was anything to do with it.
Yeah.
But I'm more of a fan of the game and actually more of a fan of like your show than, and I'd rather watch, listen to you guys chop it up in the intermissions usually than watch most of the game anyways. Like that's,
appreciate that, man.
That's how I am.
Good news for us. That means they'll keep us around for a little bit longer.
Yeah, I really hope they do. You guys do just a fantastic job. Where can people find your book? All over.
Best bet is just probably Amazon or Indigo. Yeah, thanks for the plug, man. It's also pinned on my Twitter page at JT Bourne. So
at JT Bourne on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. Really cool. Twitter is where a lot of, that's kind of where you got your footing, right? That's where you started to put your opinions out first, right? Before the blog. So
for sure.
All right. Well, listen, thank you very much. Sorry we went a little bit longer, and I have more notes than I usually have, and I don't think I asked most of the questions, but that's all right. Hopefully we can do it again. I know you're Absolutely. A busy guy. Have a great show. I'll be watching as always. If there's anything else you want to say, if you have one piece of advice for somebody who's listening, struggling, you got anything for us today?
Yeah, I'll give you my corny line, which is the story of the two wolves, which, you know, it's an old Cherokee tale or something like that about the grandfather and his young grandson comes to him and he says, you know, Dad, I've got this kid at school. I hate him. Grandpa, I hate him. And he says, you know, we have two wolves inside of us, and one of us is evil and hate and anger and rage and all that. And the other is kindness and love and whatever. And he talks about trying to find that good place. And he says, well, which wolf wins? And he says, the one you feed. So for me, it's feed the good wolf, do the little good things.
I absolutely love that. Whatever wins, or who wins, whichever one you feed.
Yeah.
It's, I heard you actually mentioned it on, and maybe it was in your book, right? You talk about that in your book, but I had heard it many, many years ago, and then it slipped my mind. And reading your book, it was a refresh, and I'm so glad you shared it with us here today. Can't thank you enough for your time. I always feel very grateful when somebody gives me their time, whether it's here on a podcast or whether it's for 2 minutes on a conversation on the street. Time is the most valuable thing we have. It's not replaceable. So for this hour and 7 minutes, you sat in that chair and shared this time with me and the people watching and listening. So I can't thank you enough.
No better way to spend it, man. Appreciate you having me. We'd love to get you on our show sometime too.
Hey, man, I'm in the dugout just waiting, man. I'm in. Just you let me know when when the time comes, if there's a topic that relates, that's fine. But yeah, if you ever find yourself in Muskoka, especially in the summertime, come check out. We got a really cool thing going here. I'm part of it, but it's Sam Gagner's deal. We had like 40 something guys skate with us pretty much all last summer, and it's only growing. So
nice.
Come by, say hi. Yeah, if I'm down in the city sometime, I'd love to shoot you a message. Maybe we can grab a coffee and
I would love that. Love that anytime, man.
All right, Borny, thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, guys, that's Justin Bourne. What a show. What a guy. Love that guy. Kind of jealous of Kipper. Kipper gets him every day, right? I feel like he'd be a good sidekick for me to have, or maybe I'd be his sidekick. Let's rephrase that. We got some comments. I was so into the conversation. I'll get to a few of them now. We got Zale saying the intro is the real deal. My good buddy Dino, D Dean Smeal, your top bunk buddy. That's our inside joke out there in St. Paul, Alberta. Give my guy Mitch Webb a big hello and a hug for me if you see him. Gabriel Sawa, who is a dear friend of mine who I haven't seen in many, many years, is watching, and I've never seen her pop on the show. I'm not sure if she's still watching or if she just came by for a moment to leave this very nice comment that says, "Let's go, bud. So, so proud of you every day, my friend. Everyone support and watch Brady Leibold become the man and leader in recovery in hockey. This is your calling. Love watching and listening, bro." And Gabby, I'm sorry to do this to you, my dear, beautiful friend from Coquitlam, British Columbia. Gabby and I know each other for many, many years, and we actually struggled together, fentanyl and other things. And she actually lived with me for a short period of time when she fell in some hard times prior to me being homeless. Gabby and I have lost a lot of friends, a lot of people that we hung out with during those years. Most recently, our dear friend Justin Monez, who was one of my best friends, wasn't a hockey player, but he was one hell of a baseball, skateboard, snowboard, and just one hell of a human being. And sadly passed away almost a year ago now due to fentanyl. And the three of us used to hang out quite a bit. But Gabby, I can't thank you enough for your support. And to echo your words, I am so, so, so proud of you for the changes that you've made in your life, for your boys, and for yourself. I love you dearly. I'm proud of you. And the next time I'm back in British Columbia, I would love to buy you lunch and give you a big hug. Love you lots, Gab. So, so proud of you. Thanks for watching. Dean Smeal says, "What a great listen. Proud of you, Justin, and one hell of a book." I'm going to also agree with that. We got my guy, Kenny Moore. Thank you, guys. Great show. Michelle Miner, might be Tom Miner. I'm never too sure. Might be both. Been there, done that. Yes. Thanks for the story, Justin. Got to go back to work, but we'll definitely listen later. I'm going to go ahead and say that's Michelle Miner, the mother of the late Daniel Miner, former Barry Colt, who, as I've said on this show time and time and time again, sadly passed away of a fentanyl overdose in 2021. The Miner family has become essentially my family. I didn't know them until after Daniel sadly passed away, but I reached out to them to offer my condolences, to ask to see if we could honor Daniel through Puck Support. And, you know, they never questioned it. They opened their arms and their hearts. And over the last 3 years, they've truly become family to myself, to Jenna, to Susan, to everybody, certainly Puck Support. I've gone and stayed at their house several times. They've come up here and stayed several times, very close with the entire Miner family, extension Schmidt family as well. I just love you guys. And I know that this isn't easy, you know, watching my show, listening to me share about Daniel or about anyone who's passed away, but we've had the conversations and we know how important it truly is to share the hard stories. We can't do anything to go back, but we feel a great responsibility to be the difference moving forward. These stories need to be told. Kids need to be educated. Lives need to be saved. I love you guys so much. I always feel like my words don't do justice. I was been really tripping on my words here today through this entire show. Was not at my best. I'm grateful to have Justin Bourne, the pro, to back me up here today. We're going to kick it over to a quick break, and I'll be back here to bring it home.
A hat. This was given to me by Brady Lebo, who started this group called Puck Support. And I'll tell you what, it's a great organization. Brady sent me this.
That's awesome. I've been on Brady's show.
Brady, he's a kid that played major junior hockey, was with the Tampa Bay Lightning for a short time, had some major drug challenges in his young career, and he's taken this upon himself to help families who have had challenges and lost young players because of mental health. This hat I have on has a logo on the inside of it with Todd Kuhn's name on it. Todd played for me in St. Louis, and obviously we lost Todd a number of years ago. This T-shirt has, oh my God, Bob Probert's name on the inside of it. And that's what they do with all the things. So look, if you can check it out.
If you can check it out, Puck Support, PuckSupport.com on social media at Puck Support. What do you guys think of this new hoodie? I just made it. The green with the, do we like the white background logos, or is it better to just have the clear with no white? I like the white myself. Puck Support, PuckSupport.com. Use promo code HOPE. I'll make sure that it's working right now. Promo code HOPE to save 15% off. So, yeah, I got a couple cool things happening this weekend on the Pond Tournament here in Muskoka. Get to hang out with my good friends this weekend. Hopefully bring home the championship. We are going to have to go through Psycho and the boys. Shout out to my guy, Taylor Sykes, who I met 3 years ago at this tournament at opening ceremony puck drop. He leaned into me and said, "Hey man, I fucking love what you're doing here. I'm 4 years in recovery," just like that. Maybe it was three back then. And from that moment on, we became very, very close. He's one of my dearest friends and has a cottage up here in Muskoka. So I get to hang out with him a little bit in the summertime, but they are going to be here. Looking to defend their championship because they won 2 years ago and didn't play last year. We won. So we'll see. We'll see who brings it home. The Puck Daddies versus Psycho and the Boys. So come down Gravenhurst Wharf, Boston Pizza. It's going to be a really, really good fun weekend. Get out in the fresh air. Get on some natural ice. It's got to cool down, though. It's +4 right now, and everything's melting. They only got a couple days for it to cool down, so hopefully that happens. Really excited, too, about Muskoka hockey this summer. If you're looking to take your game to the next level, I think our day camps are mostly sold out. Our day camps are more targeted towards any hockey player. I think youngest is maybe 7 or 8 up to like 12 and all skill levels. We're happy to accommodate. We're going to have some NHL guest spots. Never know who might just step on the ice with you when you come to Muskoka hockey. But we also have our Elite Academy, which is for AAA and junior players. And again, you'll get some guest spots from the NHL's best and some other coaches. You can come for a week, you can come for a day, you can come for a month, you can come for the entire summer, be on the ice with me 5 days a week and in the gym with Anthony Moore, who is the Florida Panthers strength and conditioning coach who spends his summers here with him in the gym on the ice with me. And super pumped too. I get to work with Adam Nicholas again this summer, who to me is one of the best minds in all of hockey. If you want to check him out on Instagram, he's very quiet these days on Instagram because he works for the Montreal Canadiens. But if you look up Stride Envy, at Stride Envy, that's Adam Nicholas's social media. Like I said, he's really toned it down over the last couple of years. But to me is one of the best coaches on planet Earth. He has a mind for the game, and I learned more in 1 week, I think I did in 30 years with anybody else. So Stride Envy, give him a follow. Also follow at Muskoka Hockey. Someone's calling me. I wonder if you should answer this phone call. I'll do it after. Last thing I want to say. So I like to share things with my viewers, with my listeners, things that help me. I want to show you guys Cheeky Mouth Tape. So this company was started by a friend of mine, Jeremy Lagler. And basically what it is, number one, I love it because it's purple. It's my favorite color, as you know. But you put, you peel off the adhesive here, and then I'm not going to waste one, but you stick it to your mouth, and it doesn't pull my mustache hairs out, which I love. But you tape over your mouth like so, and then it forces you to breathe in and out of your nose. And I am a heavy, heavy, heavy mouth breather. And mouth breathing is not good for us. Not when you're sleeping, not when you're training, not when you're just kind of sitting here shooting the shit breathing. Like, we should be more conscious of our breath and in through our nose, out through our nose. It could be in through our nose, out through our mouth. I like to go in through nose, out through nose. And this has been a game changer for me. Really focusing on my breaths. It makes me feel grounded. It helps me with my anxiety. But breathing out of your mouth, it actually changes the shape of your face. There's a lot of different things. You can sleep with this on. You can train with this on. You can just sit around with it on. And then it's going to force you to breathe into your nose and out of your nose. And I'm not going to talk anymore about the science behind it. But you can get on Google, and some people will tell you it's bad for you. But it's just one of those hidden secrets, sort of like microdosing mushrooms, sort of like cold tubbing or ice baths were for the longest time. People thought they were bad, but now we're starting to see the health benefits. All I can say is that this has helped me. I'm not saying it's going to help you. I'm just saying this is something that I've implemented into my life when I'm, you know, just sitting around, when I'm, you know, sleeping. I did last night. I slept with this on. This is new to me, but something that I really, really, really love, and it's just made me feel so much better. Alternatively, you can just close your mouth and breathe through your nose and out your nose and really concentrate on it. But sometimes, at least for me, I default back to wanting to breathe in through my mouth, and I'm trying to change that habit and really focus on my breath. We take it for granted. We take breathing for granted. It just happens naturally. It's like, but when was the last time you actually sat there and thought about your breath and breathed with intention? So when I breathe with intention, I'm meditating, I'm manifesting, I'm visualizing. There's a lot of good things that happen, especially when I'm using Cheeky Mouth Tape. So you can check them out on social media. They're brand new, out at Cheeky Mouth Tape. Very, very inexpensive. I think for a month's supply of mouth tape, which gives you one a day, and this case, I think it was $30. So, yeah, I just wanted to share that with all of you. If you can't see and you're listening to the audio, it comes in this purple container, and it is purple in color. Cheeky Mouth Tape. Thank you very much to everybody who watched live. If you listened on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, thank you. If you're on Spotify, please rate and review. If you're on YouTube, please like, subscribe, tell your friends about it. If you're on Facebook, which I hope you're not, but I won't hold it against you, share it to your page, like it, comment. I hate asking these things, but that's what helps this grow. I've never once paid for an ad. I haven't been putting a lot into this podcast. Maybe I should be putting more into it. It's sort of died down. I'm not sure how many people, you know, are leaning on this podcast like they once were. I know there was a lot. I know we're still getting a lot of people downloading it, but I think we need to find more of a rhythm. Send me messages too. If you have some comments or feedback, I can take it. I'm coachable. Give me some feedback. I try to just be authentic. It's never going to be perfect. There's no such thing as perfection, but I do want to make it better. I always just come on here and speak from the heart. Just grateful that people want to watch or listen. This is where I was able to start getting my life back, so I don't take it for granted. I thank all of you. Thank you to Justin Bourne. Make sure you go check out his book, Down and Back, available at all major bookstores, also online, and as I took it in, on Audible. We'll be back next week.
Stay tuned for our next guest. I haven't quite lined it up, but I have some on deck. So really excited to roll this out over the next couple of months. Anyways, I got to get some puck support stuff done. Then I'm off to the rink for a private lesson. We got Trent here. Not sure who Trent is, but he's power messaging. So we'll give him a little shout out. I think that's what he wants. Let's see. There you go, Trent. Just in time to get your name on the screen. Anyways, guys, be kind to one another. Find gratitude today. Remember, you don't have to, you get to. You don't have to go to work, you get to. You don't have to get out of bed, you get to. Until next time, have a great day, if you so choose.
Was my life rookie of the year. Swift as a Bronco, laced up in my gear. Master pain went insane, yearning for that buzz. 12-year journey through the depths of hell. Criminal fentanyl, I struggled, I fell. Abused, confused, as a shadow of who I once was. Can't sleep, restless week. Up all night, a thrill of heat. I need to get my life here back on track. Used to toe tag him like Wayne Gretzky. And now I'm toe tagging homeless on Hastings. Intervenous drugs weren't enough.